Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, you have definitely come to the right place if you want to know about anything related to animation, but specifically, though, related to the latest news that happened this week in animation. Like, for example, in this episode, maybe I won't go specifically into a lot of animation, but a lot of animation-related stuff, including John Oliver getting a role that, oddly enough, fits very well for him. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the live-action reboot of Aladdin and how Disney seems to be having a very hard time trying to find an Aladdin and Jasmine. Then afterwards, we will be learning a lesson about why is it that you just cannot sue Disney just by saying that, oh, they stole my idea, da-ba-da-ba-da. Then afterwards, we're going to be celebrating Halloween with Michael Jackson. I know that it sounds weird, but apparently that seems to be the case for this Halloween. And then finally, we're going to end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And first and foremost, we are going to be going into John Oliver. Now, if you're listening to this, then maybe you are familiar with the guy. You've probably seen his videos, or at least you saw him talking about a specific subject on social media through his very popular HBO TV show, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Well, apparently, he actually managed to get himself a movie role that no one would ever expect him to get, but oddly enough, it just seems right. So what happened was that John Oliver actually got the part of Zazu for Jon Favreau's live-action remake of The Lion King. Zazu is now officially the fifth person to be among the cast of this Lion King remake, which he will be among the crew with Donald Glover playing as Simba, Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner as Timon and Pumbaa, and then finally James Earl Jones as Mufasa. Now, I would like to remind you guys that this is not the first time that John Oliver actually provided his voice for an animated project. In movies, he has already played Vanity Smurf in Sony's live-action animation remake of, or not live, well, just a live-action animated adaptation of the Smurfs. And he will soon later be in another animated film, which is Paramount's Amusement Park, which he will be among the cast with Mila Kunis, Jennifer Garner, and Matthew Broderick. And on top of appearing in different TV shows like Robot Chicken, The Simpsons, and Bob's Burgers. So that's basically overall the big news that's going on. It's the fact that they got John Oliver to play as Zazu, which is a role that, if you may recall, in the original 1994 animated feature, it was played by Rowan Atkinson. And I'm going to be honest, when I first heard that, it definitely sounds weird, but the more that I think about it, the more that it feels like, yeah, actually, oddly enough, it works. It's like one of those really weird ideas that you never expect that it would actually work out so well. In fact, I would say that John Oliver as Zazu is probably the second best casting for this movie. The first, of course, being bringing back James Earl Jones as Mufasa. But oddly enough, what I find kind of funny about this is that if you would go and ask anybody about their thoughts on the live-action remake of The Lion King and who would play as Zazu, I don't think anybody would say John Oliver as their first pick. They would probably go into any sort of different direction, like whatever popular comedic British actor to go and play the part, like maybe they would say something like Ricky Gervais or something like that. But John Oliver is someone no one would ever expect, because like I said, John Oliver is not necessarily someone who is mainly known to play in movies or to provide his voice in animated projects. Like, he's mostly well known with Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And oddly enough, he's more known as an advisor, in a sense, to the public. And that's why it feels really perfect to bring in someone like John Oliver to play as the advisor of Mufasa. So it's kind of funny, in a sense. It really does work out well. Now, when it comes to the rest of the cast, other than James Earl Jones, I'm not saying that these are bad picks. I know that people like Donald Glover, Seth Rogen, and Billy Eichner, they are great actors. But when it comes to their parts, like Glover as Simba, or Rogen as Pumbaa, or Eichner as Timon, that one, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I need a little bit more proof. I probably need, like, clips or something like that to show me that maybe this is a good idea. I need to see more proof, because I can't just rely on my head alone to see, like, how they would fit into the role. But with John Oliver, it's much more easier to do so. Like, you can easily see the guy become Zazu, so it definitely does work. Now, as for the rest of the cast, at this point, there really isn't a lot to go through. Maybe some of them, or actually, okay, you might have a few more, because in terms of the main characters for The Lion King, all we have now in terms of who to cast, there is Scar, which is going to be a big one. Then you also, of course, have the hyenas, which you got three big parts right over there. And, of course, you also have Rafiki. So who knows what direction they're going to go with, but those are pretty much the only big ones left. Oh, also, oh my god, I almost forgot. Nala and, crap, what was Simba's mom's name again? I forgot. Sari or something like that. Somewhere along those lines. Like, okay, like Simba's mom, Nala, the hyenas, Rafiki, and Scar. Those are pretty much the big ones that we have yet to know about. But if they would end up being in the same level of casting as John Oliver here, then it might turn out great. We might have another Jungle Book in our hands. And of course, it does seem like we could be going in that direction with it, considering that we do have Jon Favreau directing the project. So there could be a good chance, but I would probably say that so far, this is the only Disney live-action remake that they have in their upcoming roster that I am a little bit interested, or that I actually am curious and excited to see what they got to offer. So if you guys are excited to check out John Oliver playing as Zazu, then all you have to do is just wait until July of 2019 to see what they got. Now, for our next story right over here, we're going to be transitioning from one Disney live-action remake to another. And this one, it's actually going to be, once again, about casting. But with this, we don't know who it's going to be, because even Disney doesn't know who it's going to be. And I'm talking about the big scenario that's going on regarding the live-action remake of Aladdin. Now, if I may go in my source here on The Hollywood Reporter, let me just read you a little bit of an excerpt. The studio and Aladdin director Guy Ritchie launched a global casting call in March to find the stars for their musical based on the hit 1992 animated film about a street kid who teams up with a genie to woo the Princess Jasmine. Disney, Ritchie, and casting director Randy Hiller brought on casting directors around the world, from London to Egypt to Abu Dhabi and India, for what sources say is a massive global search. Around 2,000 actors and actresses have read for the lead roles of Jasmine and Aladdin. The big problem is that out of all those people, they have yet to decide who would be Aladdin and Jasmine. They're having such a difficult time to pick who would be their stars on this one. And they are a little bit specific on who is it that they want to go and try to get. Of course, they have to find an attractive male and an attractive female, somewhere in their 20s. And considering that they really want to be culturally accurate with this one, they have to be either Middle Eastern or Indian. But also, they have to act, of course, because it's a freaking movie. And also, they gotta sing, considering that they still want to maintain the musical aspect of it. But even at that, it's still really hard to try to find some, like, two people that would fit that criteria. Now, of course, I've seen a lot of outrage going on the internet where people are just so mad that apparently Disney could not easily find people that would fit the role of Aladdin and Jasmine. And often a lot of names have been brought up. And even myself, I was thinking at one point, like, why not just go find Dev Patel to be as Aladdin? I mean, that is a really talented actor, and I liked a lot of his works. The only one that I really hate, though, was, of course, him playing as Zuko in The Last Airbender. That was just bad. But that's not his fault. That's not his fault. That's more M. Night Shyamalan's fault. But yeah, Dev Patel is still a really talented actor. But chances are, whoever you're thinking of to play the part... Or actually, beforehand, like, another great example, like, someone you could just easily hire, just go and get the Broadway cast. That should not be hard right there. I mean, you already got someone who has experience, like, acting, singing, and literally being Aladdin. Not just any Aladdin, but being Disney's Aladdin. So why not just go get the Broadway cast? But it already stated that chances are, whoever you might be thinking about... They've already done that. Let's get back a little bit into here on the Hollywood Reporter article. It stated, while studios had interest in Dev Patel and Riz Ahmed, the male lead will be most likely a newcomer. Sources say the studio is eyeing Power Rangers actress Naomi Scott or Indian actress Tara Sutaria to play Jasmine, but can't lock the deal until the male lead has been selected, since the chemistry is so important to the story. But there could be a light side to this. The article also tried to shed a light that maybe because this is so difficult to do, it could actually be a good thing. It stated, the lengthy casting process could be a promising sign, however. Disney has had success with previous extensive casting searches for its live-action fare. From Lily James as Cinderella in the live-action remake in 2015, to Daisy Ridley as Rey in Star Wars The Force Awakens. And insiders say the studio delay in landing Aladdin is due to its determination to get the casting right for such a beloved and iconic character. And may I remind you right now, there is something a little bit troubling for Disney, is the fact that originally their entire casting call was supposed to be set for this month. They even said the original casting call specified that production was slated to begin by July, but search has dragged on with Disney and Ritchie having to go back to the drawing board multiple times. So that's kind of the big issue, is that so far Disney has no one among the cast. We don't fully know who is in Aladdin. I mean, the closest that they've got is actually Will Smith playing as the genie. And last we've heard about that information is that Will Smith is only in talks. There is no confirmation if he's actually going to be on board into the project. Or maybe there might be a source somewhere that stated that like Will Smith did officially got in. But I don't know. Like, so far from what I've seen, there doesn't seem to be any confirmation of that yet. So we don't know who is among the cast. But I want to go and ask a question that I already did on social media, and I would like to repeat that here in the Animation Podcast, is that, you know, if Disney is really having such a hard time trying to find someone to be either a live-action Aladdin or Jasmine, may I recommend something? How about you just, you know, not make a live-action remake of Aladdin at all? You know, it's not like we're going to miss anything. We already have a Disney movie about Aladdin, and that is that 1992 animated film. We don't need it to go and be turned into a live-action movie, because the whole thing with these live-action remakes in general is that they're all nothing but short-term profit for Disney. They're only made so that Disney can make the big bucks in theaters, and then afterwards, people are just quickly going to forget about it and put their focus back onto the animated features. I mean, so far, that's how it's been with all their live-action remakes. From Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, to Maleficent, to Pete's Dragon, and even to the live-action remake of Cinderella. People don't think of these movies anymore. People now think, they still think... about the 1970s Pete's Dragon, they think about Sleeping Beauty, they think about the 1950s Cinderella, and they think about the 1951 Alice in Wonderland. And probably the biggest and most recent example right now is actually Beauty and the Beast. I don't know if you have noticed, but back in March and April, Beauty and the Beast was the biggest movie out there. I mean, it was that one movie that everybody had to go and see. And even at the box office, it already surpassed like $1 billion. And as I'm recording this, it's already the highest grossing feature film of 2017. However, nowadays, nobody seems to be talking about it anymore. It's like completely silent. After all the other movies that we have gotten afterwards, like with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, War of the Planet of the Apes, Wonder Woman, and even other animated films like Boss Baby, Cars 3, Despicable Me 3, Captain Underpants, and so much more. Like, we just immediately forgot about it. We don't necessarily care much about that Beauty and the Beast movie anymore. I mean, there was that one little instance that it just got released on Blu-ray and DVD, but that was more like a fart in the wind where, like, that one little instance happened and everybody was like, hey, what was that? Oh, never mind. And I know by the end of the year that they are going to be bringing back a little bit Beauty and the Beast, just to mention as a yearly roundup of what happened in movies in 2017, and maybe a little bit during the awards season as well. But other than that, that's pretty much it. Like, the live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast is already on its path to be forgotten, to go into the wasteland, while everybody is going to put their focus back onto the 1991 animated feature, because that already set itself as a classic. And I'm not saying that Guy Ritchie is a bad director, like, he's already done a lot of great movies, but I'm sorry, I just cannot see the guy create something that could get up to the levels to the 1992 movie. And that is actually going to be another one where it's gonna happen, and it's quickly gonna be forgotten. So really, in the long run, is there really much of a point to really go and make a live-action remake of Aladdin? Like, rather it be putting in a whole bunch of newcomers or a whole lot of big-name celebrities and add giant budgets to it, is it really gonna be worth it? And to that, I have to say, honestly, I don't know. Like, really, why can't we just enjoy the original Aladdin as it is? I mean, you don't have to really make a big fuss by doing all this. And if this is really too much trouble, then just, you know, don't do it. But that's just me. Maybe Disney is going to go into a different path and they're still going to be determined to do this. Now, funny enough, we don't have a release date for it just yet. Maybe it's going to change with D23. But so far, they were planning to start filming this in August, but I highly doubt that it's gonna happen. Okay, so for our next story, we're gonna go back into a subject that I absolutely hate because it's a story filled with idiots, and that is when people try to sue Disney because they think that Disney stole their idea. And in this year, we have already seen two that are brought up, or at least from what I can remember. There is one that I covered not too long ago about this woman who tried to sue Pixar for allegedly stealing her idea for Inside Out with her project called The Moodsters. And then there is another one from Total Recall screenwriter Gary L. Goldman, who alleged that Disney completely stole his idea for Zootopia. And he brought in so much evidence for it. He brought in a lot of material of his original Zootopia idea, revealing the whole concept of it, revealing the character designs, revealing who these characters are, and even some of the dialogue. And you would find that a lot of it have some strong similarities to Zootopia, even down to the point that his title for that project is literally Zootopia. So he did show a lot of proof that there could be a possibility that maybe Disney did stole his idea to create Zootopia. However, all of this completely changed when a judge looked at this entire case, picked up all the evidence that he brought in, he looked at it carefully and said, "Nah, screw this, there's nothing here, not enough evidence." Yes, I kid you not, this entire court case has been completely dropped. Going into my source here on Deadline, U.S. District Court Judge Michael Fitzgerald has stated, Esplanade, which by the way, Esplanade is the production company owned by Gary Ald Goldman, so just to remind you a little bit on that. Esplanade alleges that Goldman twice shared a synopsis and treatment for the movie Looney, along with its idea for a larger franchise called Zootopia, with Disney agents and executives. The parties now dispute whether Goldman's materials are sufficiently similar to the Disney film to support an action for copyright infringement. But despite both parties urging, the court cannot engage in a copying analysis on the merits because Esplanade failed to either attach the allegedly infringed material to the complaint or to describe them in sufficient detail to permit the requested analysis. In this action, as in every action, it is the plaintiff's obligation to allege sufficient facts, if proven true, to permit a jury to rule in the plaintiff's favor. Esplanade has not met that burden here. And on top of that, he continued on by saying, the differences between the character designs outnumber the similarities, and the animation style itself is very different between the two sets of characters. Whereas Disney characters are typically cute and appealing, Goldman's characters evoke a darker, seedier aesthetic. And it is kind of true, because even in this article, they did show the comparisons between the Zootopia characters from Disney and the Zootopia characters made by Goldman. And with Disney, it is true that they do share the classic Disney style where, it has like this nice appeal. They seem very friendly. Where in contrast to Goldman's Zootopia, I'm just gonna say it, everybody looks like a freaking douchebag. Like each and every single one of these characters look like they're gonna look at you and they think that they are superior than you. But that's just a little joking comment on the character designs right over here. But as you can tell, this actually would give you one big lesson about these court cases. How people would immediately just jump in and try to claim that, oh, Disney stole my idea, and they cannot do it, no matter what. And that is the fact that in this case here, they can never prove enough evidence. I even admitted last time when I covered this little case that they did show a lot of evidence how there could be some similarities. But the biggest problem, and why is it that it immediately got dropped, and by the way, I'm just going to say this is my theory, maybe this is not entirely true, I'm no legal expert, but from what I'm reading and through some analysis, why is it that he had to drop all that? It's mainly because even though he is showing a lot of his own concepts and his own material for Goldman's version of Zootopia, he failed to present how is it that this Zootopia would connect to Disney. And by that, I mean, what are the direct connections to Goldman's Zootopia with Disney? What did they do creatively, or how did Disney get involved with that Zootopia. And the only piece of evidence is just the pitch in 2000 and 2009. There's nothing beyond that. We don't know if any of the artists who worked on Goldman's Zootopia would also had some kind of chat with either John Lasseter or Byron Howard or with Rich Moore regarding this idea. And they decided subconsciously, hey, let's go and do our idea of Zootopia. And they would go and do that. There's not enough evidence right over here. And no matter how much they would present, it's not even enough. They're just showing their version of Zootopia, which you never know. It could be an entire fraud thing for all we know. Like, this could have actually been done sometime, like, in this year or during the end of 2016, where Goldman decided to create his entire concept of Zootopia just for this purpose right over here. And I mean, keep in mind, these things actually existed. DreamWorks actually went through that entire process with Kung Fu Panda, where someone tried to sue them for claiming that, oh, DreamWorks stole my idea for Kung Fu Panda, but it actually turned out to be an entire fraud case. And the dude is currently going to jail for it. And with the case here for Zootopia, there's just not enough. He's just showing that, like, basically what he did is just, this is my version of Zootopia. Look at how it's similar to Disney's Zootopia. What he didn't do is that, this is my version of Zootopia. Here is how it's linked with Disney and their involvement with my version of Zootopia. He didn't do enough of that. Maybe Gary L. Goldman didn't present enough evidence on that case, but it really does show that you cannot, like, you cannot just go in and just say that, oh, they stole my idea because I made this pitch. Making a pitch is not enough proof to claim that they stole your idea. Even at that, Disney would be completely prepared if they would steal an idea from a pitch. They would say, like, whatever you would pitch to us, then it's going to be our thing now. So that's kind of the big problem, is that no matter what, no matter, like, if you're fully prepared with your evidence, you have to show the evidence with the direct connection between you, your project, and Disney. You cannot just show any of the other little details of what's going on inside your little project. You have to show what is it that Disney did with your project. And that's why Gary Goldman failed to present a case here. He only showed his Zootopia, not Disney's connection with his Zootopia. Now, our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about Halloween. And I'm sure with you guys, you would definitely have at least one animated character you would like to celebrate with Halloween. Rather it be watching a TV special or a movie, regardless if it's like the Rankin-Bass Universal Monsters or Jack Skellington in The Nightmare Before Christmas, or something that doesn't have to be directly related to Halloween, you know, something like with Coraline, or with Manolo in The Book of Life, or even with the vampire Adam Sandler in Hotel Transylvania. But apparently, CBS would like to come in and suggest a new person, a new animated character that you can go and celebrate Halloween with. And what I'm talking about is Michael Jackson. Yes, CBS is going to be bringing Michael Jackson back from the dead in a special, in a one-hour animated special called Michael Jackson's Halloween. Now, this is going to be from Optimum Productions, with Hammerhead providing the animation. And the story goes is that by the way, going into my source here on Variety, the special follows millennials Vincent and Victoria, who meet accidentally on Halloween night and find themselves, along with Ichabod the dog, at a mysterious hotel located at 777 Jackson Street called This Place Hotel. Once inside, Vincent and Victoria are sent on an adventure culminating in a spectacular dance finale featuring an animated Michael Jackson. To go into the little details of what's in this Halloween special. The special will feature Jackson's acclaimed music as its soundtrack and will be broadcasted for the first time this fall. Created and produced by Optimum Productions, the Michael Jackson company now owned by his estate, the special will feature voice of actors like Christine Baranski, Kiersey Clemons, which, by the way, Clemons will be playing Victoria, Alan Cummings, George Eads, Brad Garrett, Lucy Liu, Jim Parsons, and Lucas Till, which Till will be playing Vincent. So that's basically kind of this Halloween special that you're going to get right over here. I guess in a way, the best way to put it is, how is it? Imagine maybe a mix of Hotel Transylvania with Romeo and Juliet, where the Hotel Transylvania aspect is that you got these humans going into this hotel and chances are they're going to meet with a whole bunch of monsters. And the Romeo and Juliet aspect is going to be the soundtrack entirely covered by one artist. But instead of Elton John music, you're going to get a whole bunch of Michael Jackson music. And in here, I don't know if it mentioned, is it going to be a musical? Or I don't know. Well, it said like it's going to feature music. So we don't know if it's just going to be... Okay, well, it did mention like the special will feature Jackson's acclaimed music as its soundtrack. So you're just going to hear stuff in the back. Like, I don't know. Like maybe Halloween versions of his song. Like, you know, stuff like that. Maybe they're not going to fully go into a musical production, but oddly enough, I mean, they have some great singers like Brad Garrett and Alan Cummings. So, having a few musical numbers, like you could go a little bit more into a Halloween version of Moonwalker in a sense. That wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, it's Michael Jackson's music. His songs are definitely great. But we know what's going to happen in the end. I mean, mentioning how, like, the grand finale is going to be a dance number with Michael Jackson, we all know how it's going to end up. It, like, the finale we're going to have is going to be an animated version of Thriller. I mean, that's kind of the big reason why they're doing this. I mean, it is the song that really boosts Michael Jackson's popularity, where even nowadays, after his death, we know him as the King of Pop. So, of course, they're going to do something related to Thriller and stuff like that. So, who knows what they're going to pull off with this one. But there is one thing, though, I will admit, that is actually kind of funny. Like, somehow, the description here, they have to really point out the fact that these kids are millennials. They have to point out the fact that, oh, Vincent and Victoria are millennials. Like, they can't just say that they're kids. But then again, considering that this is a Michael Jackson special, it is a little bit better that that Vincent and Victoria are millennials instead of kids. So that, you know, just in case if we have to make them a little bit too old for Michael Jackson's taste, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, is it going to be worth it? Is it going to be anything special? I honestly, this is literally something called Michael Jackson's Halloween. Like, it's going to be made for Michael Jackson fans. So, I don't know, maybe they're going to throw in a lot of references to not only his music, but a lot of moments in his music videos. Who knows how it could happen, but if you guys are excited to go and check out Michael Jackson's Halloween, then all you have to do is wait until this fall for this special to be released on CBS. And so, finally, we are going to end this off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And I just want to say right now that if you guys know me and you've watched my videos for a long time, then you might know that one of my favorite things other than animation is, of course, the Muppets. I absolutely adore the Muppets. I look up to them like my heroes. The Muppet Show is one of my favorite shows, and I love watching their movies. Not all their movies, because there are a few projects that are honestly not that good, but I've definitely enjoyed a lot of them. The Great Muppet Caper, The Muppet Movie, Every Christmas, I love watching Muppets Christmas Carol. I even really enjoyed their recent films like the 2011 Muppets movie and Muppets Most Wanted. However, there is one big news that actually occurred that it may not sound like much, but it actually is a really huge deal. Now, apparently, toughpigs.com, one of the biggest Muppet fan websites, they went and contacted Disney regarding one little question, and apparently they actually did confirm this case, that Steve Whitmire is no longer among the cast of the Muppets. So, you might be wondering, who is Steve Whitmire, and why is it such a big deal that he's no longer with the Muppets? Well, here's the thing. Steve Whitmire has been a puppeteer with the Jim Henson Company and with the Muppet Studios for a long time, ever since 1978, beginning with The Muppet Show. And after Jim Henson's death, he was the only man playing as Kermit the Frog. There was no other actor being Kermit other than him, officially. So he legit was the one and only Kermit the Frog after Jim Henson's passing. But not only that, Steve Whitmire also played other puppets as well, other Muppets, I would say. Like, some of them are his own creations that he developed, and others he had to pass on the torch. He was known to play as Bean Bunny, he was known to play Rizzo the Rat, he was known to play Beaker, and sometimes he would be known to play as Statler. But the big clue that Muppet fans had was actually on the Muppets YouTube channel, which if you follow that, then you may know they would do this weekly series of like 1 minute videos called Muppets Thought of the Week. And they noticed that any of Steve Whitmire's Muppets have never been present. Like, there has yet to be really a Muppets Thought of the Week featuring either Beaker or Rizzo or even with Kermit. That is a big clue right over there. And for a while, we tried to figure out, like, why is it that he got, like, how is it that he's no longer a part of it? Did he quit? Did he get fired? Or what is it that happened? Well, not too long afterwards, Steve Whitmire actually opened his own blog, which you can go and check out, which is called Steve Whitmire - is it dash? Yes. Sorry. Steve Whitmire - MuppetPundit.com. And I'm not going to read all of it, but he did release this little post explaining a little bit of the situation. So just taking some excerpts over here. As I am sure you can imagine, I have experienced every possible emotion since October of 2016 when I received a phone call from the Muppet Studios executives to say they were recasting. Through a new business representative, I have offered multiple remedies to their two stated issues, which had never been mentioned to me prior to that phone call. I wish that we would have sat down, looked each other in the eye, and discussed what was in their mind before they took such drastic action. I have remained silent the last 9 months in hopes that the Disney company might reverse their course. Doing what is best for the Muppets is in the lens through which all my interactions have been filtered. Given the opportunity, I remain willing to do so, whatever is required to remedy their concerns, because I feel my continued involvement with the characters is in the best interest of the Muppets. Please forgive any faux pas. I have not been active in social media previously and have a serious learning curve. I just want you all to know that I am sorry if I have disappointed any of you at any point throughout our journey, and to let everyone know that I am devastated to have failed my duty to my hero, which he is referring to Jim Henson. So with that said, some of you might be wondering, who is it that's going to be playing Kermit now? Nobody knows so far, but going back into Tough Pigs, I lied right over there, I apologize, we do know, Disney actually went and recast Kermit, to be Matt Vogel. And it says, the other half of this bombshell is that Matt Vogel, Muppet performer since 1996, will be Kermit's new performer. The irony that Matt previously performed Kermit's imitator, Constantine, in Muppets Most Wanted is not lost on us. However, Matt has proven to be a talented and professional torchbearer of other classic characters, such as Floyd, Lou Zealand, and the Count. So we are intrigued to see how he will continue Kermit's legacy. So that's kind of the big situation, is that somehow, quietly, the Muppet Studios and Disney unfortunately had to let go of Steve Whitmire and decided to go recast him as Matt Vogel. And they did. Disney actually did put out a statement saying that Steve Whitmire is no longer working with the Muppets. Matt Vogel will be the new performer for Kermit the Frog. He will be. We will be seeing Matt's first footage as Kermit in a Muppets Thought of the Week video next week. And like, honestly, this is actually pretty huge. And for me, someone who was just born after the death of Jim Henson, I pretty much grew up with Steve Whitmire's performance as Kermit ever since the very beginning, because once, like right after Muppet Vision 3D, Steve Whitmire had to take Kermit and do the first performances for him in Muppet Celebrates Jim Henson, which is kind of the Muppets response video to the passing of Jim Henson. And then his first real big project as Kermit, which is the Muppets Christmas Carol. And I just want to go back to this article right over here. Well, not the article, but the blog that Steve Whitmire himself posted. And it's a little troubling to hear this little comment that he made at the end, that I am devastated to have failed my duty to my hero. And I just want to, if I may speak directly to Steve, dude, what you said right there, that you failed your duty to your hero, I'm sorry, that's pure bullcrap. You have failed? Are you kidding me? With all the stuff that you have done, you would say, like, you would go on the internet and you would tell us that what you have done with Kermit is stating that you have failed your duty? Let me just remind you a little bit. Like I just said before, you had to immediately take Kermit after Jim Henson's passing and do real big projects to go out and be the first guy to be the post-Jim Henson Kermit the Frog for projects like Muppets Celebrating Jim Henson and Muppets Christmas Carol, which, may I say, with Muppets Christmas Carol, which you would say is your real big debut as Kermit, like, a lot of people would even argue that might actually be the best Muppet movie ever. And with people like me, it's like a holiday tradition to watch that feature film. Some people would even say that it's one of the best Christmas Carol adaptation. And ever since then, you would fall, like, you would carry on Kermit's legacy through thick and thin. Even during the 2000s, during the low point of the Muppets' popularity, you still held on to Kermit, and you still made him at least relevant to have people talking about him. Like, even with projects that are some of the worst Muppet projects ever done, like some of the Christmas specials, like, you still had that determination to go out there and to bring Kermit to life. And you played a huge freaking part in bringing back the popularity of the Muppets to make them a household name in the modern generation with the 2011 Muppet movie and also with Muppets Most Wanted. You really, and I really do mean it, that you had a huge part in there. You had a role that can arguably be as big as what Jason Segel did in that movie. And ever since then, you actually managed to make Kermit the Frog a household name even to this day. Kermit is still considered not just a puppet, but as a living, breathing celebrity along with all the other Muppets. And this is on top of the other characters that you have brought to life, including Rizzo, Bean Bunny, Beaker, and so much more. With that giant legacy that you have done to make Kermit still relevant and still a hero to millions of people. You would go out there and you say that the legacy that you left, you say that you failed your duty? That's failing your duty right over there? Hell no, man. If Jim Henson would have known all this stuff that you have done with Kermit, he would be absolutely proud. You have done a massive service to the Muppets. You were one of the biggest players in there. You were Kermit the Frog ever since, like for a big chunk, for like more than almost three decades. You were Kermit the Frog. And to all the Muppet people, like, if I may speak for all the people who have loved the Muppets, you did not fail your duty. You have succeeded. You have definitely won this mission to portray Kermit the Frog. You did it, man. You were a true hero. You deserve to be among in the same steps as Jim Henson. You did good. Do not look at this as failing your mission. I understand that you are devastated that you're no longer a part of the Muppets, but you did still leave a giant impact, and the Muppets would not have done it without you. You have succeeded your duty, man. You've definitely succeeded. It is unfortunate that you cannot continue, but you've definitely done a great job no matter what. You were Kermit the Frog, and to many people, you will still be Kermit the Frog. You have done a great job. But with all that, there is one more thing I would like to mention, though, that for Matt Vogel, I don't want to be like that guy, you know? I don't want to be that guy who's always going to be pessimistic and negative, you know, just writing dumb comments on the internet, just making angry messages like, I wish Disney didn't kick out Steve Whitmire. Man, Matt Vogel sucks. He doesn't sound like my Kermit. No. I'm going to be optimistic right over here, and I'm going to wish the best of luck for Matt Vogel to be the new Kermit the Frog. This is a huge responsibility, but I definitely do have confidence that he will definitely bring in like the same charming and lovable personality of Kermit, just like what he did when carrying the legacy of characters like Floyd, Lou Zealand, and so much more. I'm sure he could do the job so well. And with that said, I definitely do wish the best of luck for Steve Whitmire for his future projects, maybe not with the Muppets, but on whatever path he goes, I definitely do wish the very best for him. And to Steve, all I could say right now is just thank you. And especially, I just want to share a personal little moment that you really did made my entire night. The moment when you and many other Muppeteers came up to that one night at Just for Laughs back in 2012. It truly was a dream come true to see you come in and actually bring Kermit to life in front of my eyes. It was just purely magical, and it did feel like a dream come true. So to that I say, thank you so much. And with all that said, that is all that I've got for this week. So I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Matthew Brunette or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be wonderful. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button in our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.